Tuesday is Gaur Purnima, is the appearance day of Lord Chaitanya. Last week, or maybe it was the week before, we were discussing about the more subtle meanings behind Lord Chaitanya's taking sannyas. And when you think about it, this same kind of a point could be applied in other aspects of his life. And since the deities who are our, I would say, predominating deities for this HariMedia.net, for everything I do, is Gaur Nittai there in St. Petersburg. And since Tuesday is Gaur Purnima, I thought I would discuss a little bit about the present-day situation of Lord Chaitanya. It's amazing, in fact, how every Saturday I'm looking in the temple room in St. Petersburg, and I'm very aware of the fact that Gaur Nittai have the same perspective I have when looking at you. It's an interesting experience. And I'm actually more convinced than ever that Lord Chaitanya is as relevant now as ever, because he is a living personality. He's not a historical figure. We had many discussions last night. Some of them were based upon how you would transform the way in which things are not going properly to a situation where things are going properly in a community. Obviously, we live here in this Alachua community, so we have to think about that. As you know, I spent a lot of time, a lot of my life, working on large-scale master kind of plans in relation to the Mayapur project, or in relation to long-term publishing, or in relation to social development. This is a kind of a thing that I think about. So I'd like to just show how that same kind of thought process that goes into creating a master plan in any of these kind of areas can be very, very relevant to spirituality, to Lord Chaitanya, to the development of the divine harmony that we have been discussing in the past. The first and most important aspect in making any kind of a plan is to start off with making a survey of what you've already got in front of you, to understand what is the present situation and deeply understand it. Because all development that will take place must be in reference to the present situation. Because if you try to develop things on the basis of some other situation, it's going to be chaotic. And all of these points relate directly to the way in which Lord Chaitanya appeared, the culture in which he appeared, at the time in which he appeared, the way he acted, the way he related with the circumstances around him at that time. He acted in a very compatible way according to the time that he was in. And if we want to understand Lord Chaitanya at present, without considering him as a historical figure, which is very impersonal, but considering him as a living being right now, we have to consider exactly how we have life, exactly how life is manifesting right now, and the context within which Lord Chaitanya is manifesting and relating with us. Now, for those of you who've been around, those of you who have heard me discussing quite some time in the past, you will know that one of the main points that I emphasized was that if you really want to understand how to move, how to evolve, you have to know where you are so that when you are really situated where you are right now, you can make a step from where you are. Because to make a step from some other location, like if you have some illusion of where you are, and then you make a step, it'll be disaster. You have to know where you are in the evolutionary sense. What you are, where you are, all that which is around you. You have to basically locate yourself on your own evolutionary map so that when you do make another step forward, it'll actually be from the place where you are now and moving forward from that place. That's a very, very important point. Many people live in illusion. They think of themselves as this or that or the other thing, which is not really in relation to what they are. So all of the steps they try to make to evolve, to develop, are from an illusory starting point. When your starting point has no connection to what you really are, all the steps you make are disconnected from you to some extent or another. They are not as effective as they should be. Let's say you're going to develop a project. Let's say Mayapur or any plot of land anywhere where you feel like making a community. Let's just use that as an example to explain what I'm talking about further. So what's the first thing you do? You get a survey done. You know exactly the limits of your property. You chart out all of the limits of your property. You make a map. And you know, within this area, I must be concerned with my physical development. And then you have to understand that area in the context of the local community around it, the local area around it. And then after that, you have to understand it in terms of the region you are in. Obviously, you have to understand it in terms of the country you are in or the culture you are in. Because your project does not exist independently of the land that it is on, the community that it is in, the region that it is in, or the particular legal structure of the country or the cultural structure of the country that you are in. Now, obviously, you can start speaking about the continent you are in and the earth you are in and the universe you are in and the existence you are in, but let's not go berserk here. We're trying to make a very simple point. So, if you think about it, each of us do this in our own homes. We have our master plan. We know in our own apartment or flat, in our own home, our own property, we have this very delineated area that is ours to take care of. And within it, we arrange things the way we want. We make plans about how it'll develop. We have certain like principles upon which we relate within that area. We do the same thing. If you want to put furniture in or curtains, you have to measure the area. You have to see in what context it will go, how things will fit together. You make these decisions. And naturally, that's always in the context of your local community, your region, your country, and so on. And in fact, each of us also have the same responsibility to create the same kind of master plan in our own individual selves, our inner life. We have this field of activity, so to speak, the body, the specific energy of the body, the mind, the emotions, the cellular structure, that which we have inherited in our families, that which is given to us through the behavioral modification of our societies, cultures, and parents. So our own physical being is the region we have to understand, and when we understand it well, we can start to develop it in the same way we do it with our places of residence, in the same way we can do it with a piece of property where you want to develop. So those who make plans without considering these factors, who don't consider their bodies, their minds, their emotions, or the places of their residence, or the region or community in which they live, must fail in their development of those areas, because they are working in a way which is not related to the reality of their situation. So when you're going to do any kind of a project whatsoever, you have to start with a survey of what you have already. A very detailed survey on all levels. What is the place in which I do this project? Understand it in all of its nuances. Understand its positive aspects and its negative aspects. Understand the people who will do the project. What they're like. What they want. What they can do. What they can't do. The point is obvious. We all understand it. We have to know what we're dealing with. That's the basic bottom line. First, you understand that completely because that will rule what you do next. So, when you think about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared in Bengal in the Middle Ages. That was his field of action. It was a village culture. Everybody lived in mud huts with straw roofs. They took bath in the Ganga because they didn't have any running water. They lived a very local, agrarian-based, trade-based, communal-type society where everyone took care of everyone in a village. Everyone knew everything what was going on in the village. It was an occupied territory. There was a foreign power in charge of it, an Islamic power, who was in charge of all of the governmental procedures and everything. It was within a predominantly Hindu culture, and it was within a predominantly culture which was, directed or influenced greatly by the Mayavada schools. So Lord Chaitanya perfectly related to, fit within, and manifested himself in the exact context within which he appeared. Now some people would say, that's because that's exactly the context that he really has, whatever that means. They will also go as far as to say, that's what really should be. All of these advancements we have in the modern world are not proper. They're not natural. They have nothing to do with the real way of acting. The perfect way of acting is to have an agrarian culture, agrarian society, live very simply in villages like this, and have a government that is Islamic, which is dominating you and forcing you what to do. Now, of course, I'm being sarcastic, and of course, people don't present it like that, but I'm just trying to present it in an extreme way, just to bring up the point that, no, I don't think so. It is not that just because it was like that then, it has to always be like that. And everything we have now is therefore absolutely wrong. We didn't see Lord Chaitanya making some kind of political conflict or rebellion against the government. Only when the Qazi tried to restrict Sankirtan, then he had a chanting party to influence him in some way. Lord Chaitanya lived very peacefully within all of these arrangements, which some of them were quite disturbing. Even the fact that most of the temples he visited were temples of Lord Shiva. He didn't care. He didn't start thinking, oh, demigod worship, I shouldn't go there. I'll become somehow, changed or transformed by this. He went and he worshipped. He chanted Hare Krishna. He paid his respects to Lord Shiva. He met with Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati in one of his journeys. He didn't try to make active conflict against the Mayavada school. Just think about that. He even accepted Mayavada sannyas because that's what you did. He just went along with the circumstances he was in. Now just consider the way Lord Chaitanya dealt with Prakashananda Saraswati when he was there before them. They were talking. He was invited. He sat in a distance. They were talking, discussing their whole thing. He didn't say anything. He didn't object. He didn't storm out of the room. He didn't burn his clothes and jump in the Ganges. And even though he was still there, he didn't cut out his tongue or cut out the tongue of the others who were talking. He didn't kill himself out of frustration. Now, I'm not just making these up as extreme examples. This is stated what you should do. He just sat there. And then they said, why don't you come forward? And why don't you say anything about this? And he said, I think like this. He didn't say, you are bad and you are wrong. He said, I think like this. Lord Chaitanya never defined himself by negating something else. He didn't define himself in that discussion by negating what they said. He didn't define himself in a society by negating the Islamic government or negating the Mayavada school or negating others who disagreed with him, so to speak. He didn't define himself by negation. The Mayavadas were talking. He was listening. And when asked, he said, I think like this. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went on for days talking about his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Lord Chaitanya simply sat there and listened, didn't say anything. When Sarvabhauma asked him, what do you think about this? He said, well, doesn't make any sense to me because I think like this. In other words, he said, I am this person. I have these ideas. Let's put aside for a second where they come from. I'm not talking about some absolute level here. I am a person. I have these ideas. I believe these things. They make sense to me. And now I'm going to express them to you. Now, this is a very different mood than we usually see amongst those who are intellectually active, who are very expressive about their beliefs, and who have within them the deep conviction that what they believe is right and what everybody else believes is wrong, and it's their duty to convert the others to what they think. Just consider how Lord Chaitanya acted. It was in a way which really was transcendental to all social considerations, all political considerations, all philosophical considerations ultimately. And above all, even transcendental to religious considerations, sectarian religious considerations. He was just a wonderful, loving personality who was so powerful in that love. He just emanated that love everywhere, and anyone who came in contact with him was absorbed in that love. After all, what's more attractive? Somebody who's very convincing, very erudite, makes arguments and things, and can extremely well convince you of something else, or someone who's just so spiritual, so filled with love, that you just become drawn into that love. Ultimately, the essence of all spirituality is that love. Ultimately, the essence of all spirituality is the experience of that love, the connection with the divine, the connection with Radha and Krishna, the connection with that love that we are all thirsting for, we are made of, and which is actually our essence. Yet Lord Chaitanya lived within a context. And in that context, because there wasn't diversions such as the internet or TV or entertainment of various kinds or other forms of activities which were totally foreign at that time, was based in intellectual discussions amongst the higher class of people, the intellectual class of people considered higher at that time. So those intellectuals would think badly of him or criticize him or say things about him because they said he was emotional. He just cared about love. Everything was based on love. There was no philosophical background to it. It was not based in logic and reason. Those personalities were based in the rationality, in the very male aspects of spirituality. Reason, rationality, structure, logic. These things were valued. These things were the most important things at the time. That was natural because it was a historical process of the, shall we call, the melanization, the removal of the female energy from the divine sciences, the strict creation of the male dominance in all spiritual aspects that has been going on since thousands of years. So naturally, these very erudite scholars have managed to perfect the art of expressing spirituality from that pure, rational, left brain understanding, scientific discussions breaking down every little aspect of a word into its root understanding. Just like modern scientists bring it down to the atoms and below. They were doing that with logic and reason and words. So from that point of view, they were in a diseased condition. Lord Chaitanya came and brought Radha, presented Radha, the energy, that love, that nurturing, that care, that real essence of the heart, of the soul, of spirituality. He was not interested in arguing yet because of the context and the society he was in. When he was being challenged or asked, do you have any opinion? Do you even think? He said, well, I think like this. Can you imagine the shock? These people didn't even think he thought. They thought he was just some emotional person who would lay down, roll around, you know, had no connection with rationality. Yet when he expressed himself, he did it in such a scholarly, erudite, clear, aware, and shastric manner that they were amazed. Naturally, everything he said was in reference to a literature, because that's what they accepted. So he presented these arguments in such a manner to show that personality, to show that this deep connection of love, of connection between the living being and the divine, is a documented shastric ingredient. It is not a concoction. It is not just an emotional outburst. Now, when you think about religious literatures, you'll find it in the Bible, you'll find it in other religious literatures, especially in the Indian Vedic literatures. You always have these elements which somehow nobody can really figure out what they're doing in there. Like, for example, genealogy of kings or families. You'll see pages and pages being referred to of this one begat that one, begat this one, this was the daughter of, the son of, this was the family, this is where they lived. You'll find that over and over again. Whenever I got to those points, I just kept turning the pages. I mean, who really cares? Who was the son? Who was the daughter? Big deal. When they did something interesting, then it was cool. That was good something. That was a very interesting thing to be concerned about. And then there's structure, structure of the universe, structure of atoms, structure of things. Very scientific, very technical, and perhaps not even relevant. And then there's these deeply existential discussions about existence in terms of, in the Vedic thing, the Sankhya of things, the way of breaking down existence into its most elemental parts and putting it back together again in the context of yoga sometimes and in the context just of discussion. And then there's a lot of stories, historical stories about some people who did things within certain contexts which are supposed to bring out morals or are supposed to bring out things we're supposed to understand. There are analogies. These different aspects which are meant to clarify in various ways some points. And amongst that, there are specific things which are very useful for people trying to advance in spiritual life. Now, Lord Chaitanya's discussions, when he was engaged in such discussions, and this was very rarely, like for example with Prakashananda Saraswati or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, or others of that particular kind of nature, very intelligent intellectuals of highly developed schools of thought, he would then relate with them specifically to explain how he felt and related to the Supreme, the relationship, the love, and how the love made sense. And ultimately, it wasn't the discussions which changed people. It was his pure love, his pure energy, which enveloped them in a non-threatening manner. A non-threatening manner. They became embraced by him. And that gave them awareness of their own self, their own energy. In other words, he influenced them to be what they are without having to defend it or to cover it in some kind of intellectual justification. Now, we can go on and on about the pastimes Lord Chaitanya had then. I may even continue with that later, especially about how he lived within the family existence, within the village, with relationship to mothers and families and so on. Then how he would travel and then just simply embraced everybody in love. And then how he was engaging in Jagannath Puri. And then how he just simply went into his own world of spiritual reverie. But I'm going to save that right now. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I felt it was important to show that that historical person was not bound by the history. He was relating to the time, to the people, and to each and every individual situation that was coming before him in a way which was appropriate. Now, my proposition or the way I see it, is that if I think of Lord Chaitanya as a historical personality, it's basically the same way of thinking him on the altar as some wood, some neem wood. And if I think of him only in terms of what he did then, I'm very much limiting my connection to him now. To a certain extent, I will be wishing I could be there or go to where Lord Chaitanya is now or to sometime, somehow or another, in some esoteric transcendental manner, enter into that realm again. Or I will, knowing that these things are very difficult, if not impossible, I will then accept some kind of mission, which I think will be the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and I will bring others to the point of also considering that historical personality or the deity on the altar, which I may also not be able to connect to. And I may do that within the context of a religious movement, because I will think that I have to get some authority. I have to get some sanction on what I'm doing. But if you think about it, Lord Chaitanya said, Amar Agya Guru Hoye Sarvedesh, that on my order, in other words, it's already sanctioned, you become a guru, a teacher, a presenter of this spirituality. In other words, you are already sanctioned, you already have the power, you are already empowered by Lord Chaitanya, so you don't really need these other things. And the most beneficial thing would be to feel the energy of Lord Chaitanya, to be able to feel the connection, that love of Lord Chaitanya. But what limits us from doing that? Well, we may think that, well, Lord Chaitanya is not here now, he was there then, so for him to embrace me in that way, I would have to be there then. I'm not there then. He cannot do it now. But I don't think like that, because if the deity is Lord Chaitanya, and to understand that, of course, is an evolutionary step, if Lord Chaitanya is the divine love of Radha and Krishna, if he is Radha Krishna combined, if he is that powerful personality, what stops him from embracing me now? There is nothing to stop him. That's why when we stood in front of the deities in St. Petersburg and just accepted their energy, accepted their love, accepted what they were giving to us without any personal objection to anything, without any personal baggage or distortions getting in the way, we actually felt their presence. The only thing stopping us would be our own thought, such as, I cannot, I don't want to, it would be wrong because I'm so bad and fallen, I don't want to pollute Lord Chaitanya, or I can't concentrate, or any other derivative of these thoughts. Or even worse, people in the name of Lord Chaitanya will say, you cannot do like that. That's not right. You have to go through this very specific means by which you can get to Lord Chaitanya through like the whole parampara, through the whole history, to attain some other external state from where you are now. Even if you are internally going there, it's somewhere not right now. It's somewhere over in another realm. But I don't feel like that. I don't feel like that because I have another experience. That experience of Lord Chaitanya's presence right now, when we stand before him in the deity form, when we stand before him in the temple, and we just experience his energy. I feel it. I experience it. Others have done so too. It's not just some mental concoction. It is not just some deviation. It is the natural expression of that spiritual energy, which we feel. By calling out to Lord Chaitanya now, by connecting to Lord Chaitanya now, you can experience his love. You can experience that connection, that feeling, that power, that empowerment. Because after all, he made it available to everybody. He said, on my order, it's there. You don't need to be sanctioned. So this understanding, of course, is the way I experience, the way I feel, the way I do things. But I don't think I'm anything different than anybody else. I think others can do it too. I've seen others do it. I've experienced that everybody can have that connection right now with the living Lord Chaitanya, not the historical one. And that that living Lord Chaitanya is dealing with the reality, with the context of us within the society we live, within the culture we live, within the facilities that we live. For example, this broadcast over the internet. And all of this which we do, all of the lives that we lead, this is all part of the context within which we can connect to Lord Chaitanya right now and express Lord Chaitanya to others. To that degree, you are bound by history and culture of the past. To that degree, you will be limiting your capacity to be relevant in the present. Even though, of course, the past has certain lessons, has certain things about it which are very good for us to know, because after all, the present is to a certain extent based on the past, but it is within the present that we act. It is within the present that we can make forward motion. So at least here, where I'm living now, Tuesday is Purnima. And Purnima is the day in which the moon becomes full, and the moon represents the emotions. The moon represents the way in which we feel, the way in which we relate with our feelings, the way in which we can exist with our feelings. It is a very, very important thing to us. Its energy is so important. Now, this is not an ordinary full moon. Lord Chaitanya, it's his appearance day. Yet, there's also an eclipse. Now, Lord Chaitanya appeared on an eclipse. That's, of course, interesting. Yet, when you think about an eclipse, it's kind of like a wiping the slate in a certain sense. Wiping the slate, like when you wipe a blackboard, it's like washing clean and moving on. It's an analogy I'm trying to make here. It's not literally correct. It's an analogy. So, I feel, personally, again, my personal understanding of things, can't verify it. You know, in other words, it's for what it's worth department. That something very significant is happening. That Lord Chaitanya's presence is becoming very, Lord Chaitanya is becoming very present in the world in a very relevant way. That love is starting to flow through. And even though there are so many personalities demanding the exclusive capacity to present Lord Chaitanya, the real presentation is from person to person, from heart to heart, where our own love absorbs within it others' negativity and burns it away by accepting that connection to Lord Chaitanya and sharing Lord Chaitanya with others. So I feel that strongly. I feel the inspiration to share that with you, because you will share in your own way as much as you like that energy, as much as you feel like having that connection, because it's only limited by your own conceptions and your fears. It's only limited by your desires. And I would just like to suggest there's no need for the limitation, but if it makes you feel more comfortable to wear these limitations for some time, what can we say? It's your life. You must live it according to how you are. But if you have that inclination to move in that direction, don't be afraid. It's just a really nice thing. Above all, Lord Chaitanya is not threatening. He's not a threatening personality. He's not a deity to be feared in any way. He's not a deity who demands in any way. He's a deity of love. And that is exactly what the world needs today. A lot of healing love. A lot of pure healing energy where fears are just dissolved. Where demands fade away. Where expectations are no longer ruling one's life. Where one just becomes comfortable and relaxed within oneself and accepting that loving energy of Lord Chaitanya and sharing it as a normal course of events. Not that one has to dedicatedly go out and share it. It's just normally shared as one normally shares one energy in life. And when that connection is there, when you cultivate that connection in a very conscious and concerned, empathetic manner, in other words, you really want to be the best you can be and share yourself in the best way you can together with Lord Chaitanya, it will make a huge impact on those around you. And everything that takes place will be in context to and sensitivity of the situation within which we find ourselves today. In other words, there is no need to revert to some kind of historical reality, but to accept the reality we are in and simply bring Lord Chaitanya into it because he's just so wanting to be here with us. I think it's very important to get rid of these ideas that Lord Chaitanya was this historical personality who's no longer here and therefore has no connection to us because he so much wants to be here with us. We just simply have to invite him, to embrace him. That's all. He is living now. He is living here. He is living with us. He wants us to have this connection if we want to have this connection. And it's his very deep desire. It's his whole energy is in sharing. And those who have managed to balance their feminine and masculine energies within themselves, those who have managed to break down the barriers between the left and right brain, between the rational and the internal sensitivity of their own intuitive natures, who are nourishing and yet understanding in a very contextual manner of their existence, these people have an easier time to connect to Lord Chaitanya because their energy is more compatible. It resonates in the same way. So all of these discussions, all of these techniques, all of these things we have been doing to balance the feminine and masculine energies, to break down the barriers that are there in our intellectual understanding or our emotional understanding, to connect the two, to break down this artificial barrier between the masculine and feminine, to make a very composite being of an integrated energy of spirituality in its totality, is the perfect prerequisite to connecting to Lord Chaitanya. The more we tune ourselves to that energy, the more we resonate along those very beautiful divine frequencies, the more we come in harmony within ourselves and within our environment, within the world around us, we can embrace Lord Chaitanya because that energy of Lord Chaitanya is very much a part of us, a part of our existence. So, again, Purnima, the day of the fullness of the moon, the day of the fullness of the emotional understanding, and indeed the day in which psychic capacity is most expanded, is coming. The day of the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the day of the energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entering onto this plane and just being shared with us. Try to capture it again. Try to connect with it again. You'll never have a greater experience. That's my opinion. So I will leave you with those words right now. We can have a break until approximately 20 minutes after the hour. 20 minutes after the hour, we will come back. If there are any questions, please instant message me. And then afterwards, we can also have a meditation to connect with Lord Chaitanya, to bring ourselves in connection with Lord Chaitanya, to embrace Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.